In areas of higher learning, there are always those who will question the truth, those who would question wisdom, its source. There are those today who would belittle the truth of the Bible, in fact, not even label it as truth. But I want us to answer, notice the question that is asked, but then notice the answer that we get from the book of Job this evening. The questions, where did I come from? Why am I here? Where am I going? And why is this happening to me? Are just some of the few questions that have been asked since the beginning of time, since man was created there in the Garden of Eden. But the very fact that that question, that man has the ability to ask these questions, is evidence of the great gulf that exists between mankind and the animal kingdom. It is sad to think that most people struggle through life alone, not knowing the meaning, not knowing the purpose of life. And in fact, it's not necessary that someone should go through life with such dismay and discouragement. The question and answer both found in the most ancient book of the Bible, and that answer has not changed. We want to notice this evening Job chapter 28 for our text. Mankind has attempted to answer these critical questions through life, through several avenues. Number one might be human philosophy and reason. Others might turn to science or nature. Others still might turn to revelation. It's sad to read the first chapter of the book of Romans because they obviously had been given revelation, and yet they turned and worshipped and served the creation or the creature more than the Creator. And so it is sad to me that even though there is revelation of truth, man still turned away from it, showing again free will and the ability to make a choice concerning what one would believe and what one would follow, what one would do in this life. In the book of Job, three individuals sought to help Job. Now we know the story of Job. He goes through a series of tragedies, and each one really worse than the last, to the point that he even loses his seven sons and three daughters. And then his health. It's interesting because through this book, we see these three individuals, these so-called friends of Job's, who seek through human reason and philosophy, through the human experience, as modernists might term it today, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, his friends, attempted to affirm that Job was actually suffering because he was a sinner and that of the worst kind. According to their logic, according to their reasoning, suffering always was a result of a punishment for sin, in fact. They did not have any question as to whether or not there was a God. In fact, they believed that God was, in fact, punishing Job. In fact, Eliphaz appealed to what he had observed through years. Job 4, verses 7 and 8 give us his words. Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. Bildad appealed to what he had learned from history and through antiquity. Job 8, verses 8 through 10. For inquire, I pray thee, of the former age. Prepare thyself to search of their fathers. For we are but of yesterday and know nothing, because our days upon earth are a shadow. Shall not they teach thee and tell thee and utter words out of their heart? Zophar appealed to what he really just assumed. Job 20, verses 20. Job 20, verses 2 and 3. Therefore, to my thoughts, cause me to answer, and for this I make haste. I have heard the check of my reproach, and the spirit of my understanding causeth me to answer. Really, Zophar was just there kind of on the scene, and because the others had given what they thought, Well, he assumed some things, and so he wanted to make those known. And we might say he threw in his 10 cents worth. Job continually denied that he had committed sin to warrant and bring about his troubles. He denied this over and over. And in fact, Job would deal with these, in fact, three rounds of arguments from his friends. And through these arguments, Job continues to say, "No, I have not sinned. It is not that that has caused me to suffer." But Job does ask the question, "Where shall wisdom be found?" Job 28 and verse 12. Job, though it's not revealed to Job in the book, Job was actually suffering because of his righteousness, not because of unrighteousness. Job 1 and 2 tell us this. We see the introduction. God who says, "Have you considered my servant Job? There's none like him in all the earth." In fact, so he stood out among others in his righteousness, in his faithfulness unto God. And so, really, he was actually suffering because of righteousness instead of unrighteousness, as they believed. He's not convinced then by these rounds of arguments that his friends give, these different schools of thought that they follow, one's through his observances, one through history, and then another through assumption. Job maintains his integrity through the whole ordeal, in fact. Job 13, 15 through 16, it says, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. For an hypocrite shall not come before him." Isn't it interesting how Job deals with his friends? But not only that, Job continues to serve God. In fact, if you look back to Job chapter 1 and what is said there is an indicator of how Job is going to respond really through this whole ordeal all the way to the very end of it. And then we know that he is truly blessed in the end above how he had been blessed prior to these things taking place. Verses 20 through 22 of Job 1. "Job arose, rent his mantle, shaved his head, fell down upon the ground and worshipped." Isn't it interesting? Just take a moment and think about the things that have happened. He's lost all of his substance. He's lost all of his animals, his business, if you will. Now he's lost his family. Yet another messenger comes and tells, I hate to tell you this, but the house fell down upon your family members, your sons and your daughters. And then it says, Job arose, rent his mantle, shaved his head, fell down upon the ground, and worshipped. Not many people today take that approach. But you see how God responds to this. When Satan returns and comes back, he says, "Well, you see his reaction. You see what he's done." Of course, Satan takes and twists it more and says, "Well, you take his life. Take away his health. And he'll curse thee." Of course, he doesn't do that. But notice verse 21 and 22. He says, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb. Naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. And so even when we come to chapter 28 and we see these questions from Job, whence then cometh wisdom? What is the source of wisdom? Where is wisdom to be found in all of this? Well, he's going to get his answer, but it's not that his faith is wavering in any way, or his faith is faltering in any way, or that he's charging God foolishly in any way. But here's a man who is just simply seeking answers, seeking the truth. And so God's honor then is vindicated before Satan. Job did not charge him foolishly, did not sin against him. And so, again, Job stands out in his righteousness. Through this, Job's character is developing even more day by day. His faith is actually growing, and he's trusting in God even more through all of this. He discovers true wisdom lies not in man, nor in man's ability to discover it. Job is contemplating just where wisdom can be found. And as he is doing such, he is growing closer to God, closer to, literally, the light. We'll notice that verse in just a moment. The Jewish canon actually places the book of Job, I think rightfully, in what is called wisdom literature. It is the most ancient book of the Bible, but it's also a book that is simply full of wisdom. We see a man's life and all the tragedies and all the turmoil, and if it does not apply to the Christian today, if we cannot learn valuable lessons from Job's life, then I don't know what we can teach. Because Job's suffering, the same as many do today. God gave Job the wisdom that is revealed in it. The 28th chapter emphasizes the need to hear God for that wisdom and prepares Job for the Lord's speeches that are going to follow. The Lord is actually going to lecture Job, in a sense. He's going to give him a lesson, if you will, on wisdom. Chapters 38 through 42. But in chapter 28, I want us to notice, number one, that man cannot discover wisdom. Number two, man cannot buy wisdom. And number three, only God possesses and gives wisdom. And so I want us to break down each of these verses as we go through and to notice these lessons and talk about true wisdom and what is the difference between true wisdom and what is thought to be wise today. Doesn't even match up. Doesn't even really compare. And so we think about then to begin with, man cannot discover wisdom. Human research and philosophy cannot discover true wisdom. I want us to look at verses 1 through 11 to begin with. Surely there is a vein for the silver and a place for gold where they find it. Iron is taken out of the earth and brass is molten out of the earth. He setteth an end to darkness and searcheth out all perfection, the stones of darkness and the shadow of death. The flood breaketh out from the inhabitant, even the waters forgotten of the foot. They are dried up, they are gone away from men. As for the earth, out of it cometh bread. Under it is turned up, it is turned up as it were fire. The stones of it are the place of sapphires. It hath dust of gold. There's a path which no fowl knoweth, and which vulture's eyes or falcon's eyes hath not seen. The lion's whelps have not trodden it, nor the fierce lion passed by it. He putteth forth his hand upon the rock. He overturneth the mountains by the roots. He cutteth out rivers among the rocks, and his eye seeth every precious thing. He bindeth the floods from overflowing, and the thing that is hid bringeth he forth to light. What you have here is literally a search of mankind for the treasure to be found, if you will. Whatever the treasure may yield, that the earth may yield, man is seeking it. Man wants to find it. And so he goes even to the depth of places where light has never even shined. And he goes there, risking everything that he has to search it out. The treasure that he finds, precious gems and so forth. It's interesting because in spite of the fact that man has a dignity which no other creature possesses, and you're going to see the comparison, if you will, man who is seeking out this, but yet he talks about the fowl, he talks about lions, he talks about the falcons. He says, there's a difference. They've never seen these things, and yet man has the ability to find them. Again, showing the difference, a great gulf of difference, if you will, between mankind and the animal kingdom. The sages through history, the learned men of history, if you will, they've spoken. And yet Job is still in misery. God has, up to this point, remained silent as far as Job is concerned. Man's ingenuity and determination are praised in this passage. The example of mining is used. Earth is uncovered and much was found. However, the industry and the brilliance of man failed to uncover wisdom. It's not found. The depths of the earth were sought, were uncovered, he says. No wisdom is found there. Human skill brought man much wealth. Job knew of the mines that were unearthed. They brought forth gold and silver, iron, copper, many precious stones. Egypt, Lebanon, Tarshish, other areas were known to have extensive mining operations, if you will. Tubal-Cain was a forger of every cutting instrument of brass and iron, Genesis 4:22. Way back even prior to the flood. But the wicked would not be satisfied with much gold or silver. Though he lieth down rich, he shall not be gathered to his fathers. God shall hurl at him and not spare. Job 27:13-23. What is the point? Man's not satisfied with what he's found. And so he seeks even more. He looks even deeper. He goes and he'll risk even limb and life to try to seek it out, to try to find it. Human determination will sometimes bring men to that point where they'll risk everything, even their own lives, for the chance to discover some precious treasure. But all of this to uncover only precious metals and stones. Even exploring with torches to the far reaches of darkness, verse 3. Suspended and swinging by ropes far above what other men have been able to do on the surface, verse 4. But evidently the nourishment from the soil was not nearly enough to satisfy their hunger. So they go deeper and deeper. Man will seek out hidden treasures. But it's interesting, God gave man that ability. Genesis 1:28-30. Hebrews 2:8. Psalm 8:6. Man's been given the ability to seek out, to explore, and to do these things, and to grow in this way, and to better himself. He's been given the ability to do such, and so he does. Mankind will rummage through the earth's crust. Verse 5. For stones and metals that are found there, verse 6. The eye of the falcon is sharp and keen, and he hungrily seeks his prey, yet he's never seen or fathomed the path where these valuable items are found deep in the earth's crust. Verse 7. Only man has the wisdom, the reasoning ability to do so. Not even the wild beasts have known this path. Verse 8. The mountains, underground streams, the hardest rocks are simply temporary obstacles and setbacks to man's relentless search for the treasure. Because soon these treasures are brought forth. Verses 9-11. But after all this effort that's been put forth, after man is seeking to the depths of the earth to find, what does he find? What does he fail to find? He's still devoid of wisdom. And so again, Job asked, verse 12, where shall wisdom be found? He has the ability to do all this, and he seeks out this, he brings forth this great treasure, but where shall wisdom be found? Where is the place of understanding, he says in verse 12. And though Job gives what is a great difference between, again, mankind and the animal kingdom, man has the ability to reason and to think and to do these things, yet wisdom still eludes him somehow. And so the search then continues. We come to our second point, that man cannot buy wisdom. Verse 13. Man knoweth not the price thereof, neither is it found in the land of the living. Many have unsuccessfully attempted to purchase true wisdom from soothsayers, philosophers, those who are known in higher education, from universities, scientists, theologians even, and on and on and on the list could go. But yet unsuccessful in their attempts to find true wisdom. Where many in these fields obviously look right over what is simply given by God through revelation. The problem is, it's not in man that walketh to direct his own steps. Jeremiah 10:23. There is, the other is that man faces. There's a way that seems right. It seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Proverbs 14 and verse 12. Man cannot purchase it. He doesn't know the price because there is no price for it, in fact. It cannot be purchased. It cannot be bought. The psalmist writes, God shall destroy thee forever out of the land of the living. Lo, this is the man, that is, the one who would be destroyed because of his folly in riches and wealth and his pursuit in those particular areas, that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, strengthened himself in his wickedness. Psalm 52, verse 5 and verse 7. The world cannot reveal wisdom. Even if it could, it's still not able to be purchased. Man could still not buy it. Explore the depths of the oceans, it's nowhere to be found. Verse 14, look what he says. The depth saith, it is not in me. The sea saith, it is not with me. So in the very depth, in the ocean themselves, the seas, it's not there. Verses 15 through 19, it cannot be purchased with all the wealth in the whole world. Look at verses 15 through 19. It cannot be gotten for gold, neither shall silver be weighed for the price thereof. It cannot be valued with gold of Ophir, with the precious onyx or with sapphire. The gold and the crystal cannot equal it. The exchange of it shall not be for jewels of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or of pearls, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia shall not equal it, neither shall it be valued with pure gold. It cannot be purchased. It's interesting because man is still seeking and would offer everything that he has to be able to buy it. But it's not for sale. It cannot be bought. Much like what is said of the kingdom by Jesus, talking about a spiritual kingdom. His kingdom is not of this world. John 18, verse 36. Wisdom is not of this world. James 3, verses 15 through 18, he talks about wisdom. This wisdom descendeth not from above, talking about that which would cause them to fight amongst themselves and to carry on as they were doing. He says, that wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, and gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. There's a difference then. In earthly, devilish wisdom, worldly wisdom, and godly wisdom. That which is true wisdom. Worldly wisdom is seen through philosophy, astrology, scientism, neo-orthodoxy, and on and on the list could go. But these do not give the ability in any way through their teachings for man to... It does not give man the ability to understand his destiny. It does not give him the ability to answer these questions. Why am I here? Why is this happening to me? What man prizes most cannot purchase wisdom. Proverbs 8, verse 19. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. Psalm 19:10. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweet also than honey and the honeycomb. Talking about true wisdom. And so again, Job asks the question, verse 20 this time, whence then cometh wisdom? Where is the place of understanding? Man cannot discover wisdom. Man cannot buy wisdom. And that really leaves only one source, and that's God. Amen. Verses 21 through 28, the end of this chapter, makes this point very clear. It can only be received from God. It's hidden from all the living. Verse 21. Seeing it is hid from the eyes of all living and kept close from the fowls of the air. It's hid from the eyes of the living. Destruction and death. They've only heard rumors of it, in fact. Verse 22, destruction and death say, we have heard the fame thereof with our ears, talking about wisdom. We've heard about wisdom. Destruction and death say, it's just been rumored. We've heard about it, but we don't know it. Man would have to receive it by revelation from God. Folks, this is the answer. This is what it's all about. Only by revelation from God Himself can man have true wisdom. God understands it, knows the way of it. Verse 23, God understandeth the way thereof, and He knoweth the place thereof. In verse 20 and in verse 12, where shall wisdom be found? Where's the place of understanding? Verse 20, whence then cometh wisdom? Man doesn't have the ability to discover it. He cannot purchase it. But God says, I know it. I have it. In fact, I'm the source of it. And so here is our answer. Man would have to receive it by revelation from God Himself. God understands it. He knows it. Verse 24, He sees all things that are under heaven. He looketh to the ends of the earth, seeth under the whole heaven. It also shows the grand ability of God, the great power that He has to see to the ends of the earth. Well, man cannot do that. Neither can any in the animal kingdom do that, but God can. He seeth everything that is then under the whole heaven. He has the ability to do that. He's the one that has the great wisdom, in fact. God is the sovereign creator. He understands fully. He possesses all wisdom, and it is His to give. In fact, look back at verse 7. There's a path which none in the animal kingdom know. The fowl doesn't know it. The falcon or the vulture, his eyes have not seen it. That's because God keeps it. And He reveals it as His will. He is the sovereign creator. For He looketh to the ends of the earth, verse 24, seeth under the whole heaven to make the weight for the winds. He weigheth the waters by measure. Folks, if you're into science, by the way, this is a verse for you. Long before man knew anything of a barometer, God knew something about measuring the water in the air. When He made a decree for the rain, the way for lightning of the thunder, then did He see it and declare it and prepare it, yea, searched it out. It's interesting because we've, through revelation of God, we have the answer before us. Today, scientists, philosophers, those who claim to be higher thinkers in this world today, claim that truth is not absolute, that we cannot really know. Yet God has the answer. And God gives the answer. Wisdom is His to give. Not only does He understand the way thereof, but He will and does reveal what is true wisdom if man will listen. Look at verse 28. Unto man He said. Now God begins to speak. Unto man He said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. To depart from evil is understanding. Wisdom was always given through revelation. Throughout history, God spoke. Therefore, you have what is called propositional revelation. God spoke, man received. And with that, truth is absolute because it comes from God Himself. Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. To depart from evil is understanding. Hebrews 1, verses 1 through 3. God, who at sundry times and divers manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by His Son. That's interesting. Because throughout the history of man, God has never left man to his own devices. He has always spoken to man and told him just what He expected of man. He has always guided him. Why? Because it's not in man that walketh to direct his own steps, his own way. Because he sees a way and it seems to be right, but the end thereof are the ways of death. And so God has always given direction. God has always spoken to man. How has He done that? Well, the Hebrews writer tells us different times in different ways He's done that. He's accomplished His will by speaking to man. But hath in these last days, this last age, spoken unto us by His Son. This is the Hebrews writer, likely the Apostle Paul. We've been given direct revelation from God Himself. And so He has spoken to us by His Son, whom He appointed heir of all things, by whom He created all things. We have then His Word. We have what is true wisdom, if you will. God spoke it, inspired man to write it, and we have it preserved for us today at God's will. Job 28 again in verse 21. Without divine revelation from the Creator, wisdom would literally still be hid from hid in the land of the living. Romans 1:19, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. It's interesting, you go back and read Romans chapter 1. We might think that it just has everything to do with simply them looking at nature and deciding that they're gonna reject the fact that there is a God. They're not going to serve and worship God just because they've seen the power in the creation. It's much more than that. God revealed His will to them and they rejected Him. That's what took place. They had true wisdom at their very fingertips, if you will, right there in their grasp, and they turned away from it. That's what they did. Christ made it clear to the Apostle Peter that flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee. When he asked that question, who do men say that I am? Then he said, well, who do you say that I am? Peter said, thou art the Christ, Son of the living God. He said, blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. He's the one who revealed it to Peter. Matthew 16, verses 16 and 17. And so when we think about this, seeking, I think what we see in the beginning part of chapter 28 of Job, those who were seeking, they were seeking precious jewels. Those who are seeking the truth may find it. Those who have a heart open and attentive to it will find it because it's readily available. Readily available. Jesus, He spake in parables for this very purpose. Those who were not wanting to hear the truth, well, guess what? They wouldn't understand what he was talking about. But those who were seeking the truth, they would get it. They would be able to follow his teaching, his words, and they would understand it. And therefore, they would leave the way of unrighteousness and begin to follow him. And so we see then how wisdom works. True wisdom is from above, begins with the Father himself, begins with a fear, a proper respect and awe for God. Yes, the Creator, the one who is the true source of wisdom itself. That fear is what causes us to humble ourselves in the sight of God. To humble ourselves that we might be able to, yes, attentive to those things that he has written, those things that he has spoken unto us. Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. To depart from evil is understanding. You even have the result. He says the beginning of wisdom is fearing God. Well, we've read that in other places. We find it in the Proverbs as well as in the Psalms, as well as in the that which was written by the preacher, Ecclesiastes. Solomon himself says it's the whole duty of man to fear God and keep his commandments. In so doing, he says here, the result is, if you understand it, it begins with the fear of the Lord. That's wisdom. And when you understand it, you're going to leave the way of unrighteousness. It's going to lead you out of evil. It's going to lead you to follow the God of heaven. It's going to lead you to follow Christ, his Son, who hath in these last days spoken unto us. Hebrews 1, verse 2. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do his commandments. Psalm 111, verse 10. However, the foolish despise wisdom and instruction. Proverbs 1. And verse 7. It's the reason that they're not able to see it. It's the reason that they're out there claiming that they have it, but you can't really know for sure. It's because they despise wisdom and instruction. Let it be said of us today that we're like Job. What God said of Job, that he was perfect and upright. Get this. One that feareth God and has turned away from evil. Job 1, verse 1. Job truly learned through this experience of life. Tragic? Yes, a good portion of it is tragic. But we know when we begin to read on through, we get to the end, we know that Job was blessed in the latter end, even more than he was in the beginning. Job 42, verse 12, it says, so the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than the beginning, for he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 she-asses. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. It looks like, at least appears to be, the maybe he was not, his animals, they're numbered as being doubled. In the latter end, the number was doubled. Interesting that in verse 13, he had 7 sons, 3 daughters. You know, that's what he had before. It actually is a little deeper than that, because what is likely the case is that you see a difference once again between mankind and the animal kingdom. They did not have a soul. He had 10 children, 7 sons, 3 daughters. No longer in the land of the living, but there in Abraham's bosom. Now, he's given 10 more children. The latter end, he's blessed more than the beginning. And so just a slight notation there to understand again. There's a difference between the animal kingdom and and mankind. We have the ability to reason. We have the ability to think for ourselves. We have been given dominion over the earth, over the things of the earth, the fowls in the air, the beasts of the field, the fish of the sea, all of those things. We've been given dominion over those things. Why? Because man is God's crowning creation. We've been given the ability to choose and the ability to seek out wisdom. The problem is when man seeks in areas where there is no wisdom. Wisdom cannot be found. Wisdom cannot be purchased. But rather, when he seeks it from God, the true source of wisdom, there it is. There's the answer. That's where it can be found. And so we want it to be said of us that we're perfect and upright, that we fear God, because he says that's the beginning of wisdom, verse 28 of chapter 28. And so to be made perfect or complete in Christ, one must obey the gospel of Christ, believing Jesus to be the Son of God, repenting of sin, confessing our faith in him, being baptized to wash away our sins, and then continuing to live in faithful service unto God. Revelation 2, verse 10, Matthew 10, 22. He that endureth to the end shall be saved. We think about these things as we close this evening and this Lord's Day. True wisdom will lead one to follow Christ, because true wisdom has its source with God and not with man. That's the point of our lesson this evening. Will you let it lead you to obey his commands? And if we can help you this evening, come while we stand and sing.